On this edition of the Iowa Business Report.
So it's relatively simple. Something different for which someone is willing to pay.
Innovation is key to growth and success in business. But what does the term really mean? America First is more than just a political slogan. It describes our buying habits. And in our business profile, we'll talk with an author who examined winners. This is the Iowa Business Report for the second weekend of October 2021.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com. Here is Jeff Stein.
Innovation is for many a great concept, but one which may be difficult to implement for a variety of reasons. This week, the first in a series of conversations over the next several weeks about innovation and growth in a business setting. Advance Iowa is part of the Center for Business Growth and Innovation at the University of Northern Iowa. Paul Kinghorn is director of the center and the intellectual property officer for the university. Wes James is senior program manager. They joined me via Zoom this past Tuesday afternoon. We hear a lot about innovation. It is something that we are taught is desirable, but I think many people don't exactly know what we're talking about, or the word may sound so technical because they have a limited frame of reference that they don't necessarily embrace it. So, Paul, let's start with you. When you are talking about innovation in a business or in an industry, what do you think innovation really focuses on?
No question that there's a lot of different definitions that are used in industry and abroad. So when we talk about innovation, we use a relatively simple adaptation. Basically, it represents a change or a process or a product or service that produces a new or improved solution to a customer's pain, need, want, or an opportunity. And then this is the caveat, for which the customer is willing and able to pay, or a little side note, that improves margins or reduces resources invested without compromising the customer's result. So it's relatively simple. Something different for which someone is willing to pay. And I know that that's a very general broad, and we can get into the specifics of why we use that. But just because it's new, but it doesn't change anything, doesn't require clients and or internal operations to improve in any fashion, doesn't necessarily make it innovative.
Wes, what is one of the greatest impediments to an organization adopting innovation? Is it the old, we've always done it this way? Is it fear of the unknown? What is it that when you're dealing with an organization, what's one of the biggest barricades, in essence, that they may throw up when you say, let's talk innovation?
Jeff, when we're out in the industry, we find for a company to adapt or to adopt a big change or a little change, a lot of the inertia comes from status quo. We're comfortable, we've got a familiarity, and we know how to do something well in a certain way. And when we look at new ways or changes, it's really fear of the unknown. And if we're an expert, if we're comfortable, if we're successful, especially when we're successful, or if we've built a business or a product or a reputation doing something a certain way, a change, it opens up a little bit of risk. And with the challenges we've got today, there's so many different things on everybody's plate. We're all running all the time. To put in the time and accept that additional uncertainty is always a stretch. So it's just easier to stick with the way that we've been successful so far. So it's overcoming that inertia. It happens all the time. And in a successful company, oftentimes you'll find there is a culture supporting that change. And I like to hear the way Paul approaches this with a big I or a little I innovation. You've got the big paradigm shifting change of a phone in your pocket to something smaller, the little I innovation, where just on a daily basis, you're always looking for a new way to do a standard operating procedure or a process. And you're not going to get famous. It's not going to make the company's name a household word. But if you do that little I innovation consistently, that can be a really sure roadway to success. So I think there's value in both of those.
So what Wes brings up is most people, when they think of innovation, they think of something large, really substantial. And there's some research that was done by Dr. Day out of the Wharton School of Business at the University of Penn. Really good stuff that talks about, you know, the difference between like technology breakthrough, whether it's incremental or relatively small versus really substantial, and then the impact it has on the market, whether it's really small or whether it's really substantial. And he broke it out and used terms that we all ubiquitously use on a regular basis. We talk about innovation, but he differentiated in a meaningful way. In fact, we gave a presentation to a large manufacturer, some engineers that were there. And when we shared this concept with them at the end of this 4-hour workshop, they said that was the most insightful thing of anything we presented, because it also challenged what they normally thought of in terms of these terms. And so, for instance, he differentiates the difference between breakthrough, disruptive, or game changer, right? All terms that we use, we talk about innovation, but in Dr. Day's model, breakthrough is something that is really advanced technologically, but not necessarily yet having a market impact. So the role I have within the university as the intellectual property officer, I get the benefit of working with faculty who do really, really state-of-the-art things. I mean, up against the best in the world types of things. And it's really fun to see and be part of that. We haven't yet gotten fully to where it can be commercialized, so we would consider that step to be breakthrough. On the other hand, if it's not all that significant in its technology adaptation, but it really makes a difference. So think of Uber or Lyft, or think of Airbnb. All they did differently was democratize, you know, these resources out there, people's homes for overnight stays in the case of Airbnb, or using your own car to shepherd people around. But in any event, it is no less disruptive, but it didn't take a huge lift technologically. And then if it is both technologically advanced and has super market impact, then we get things that are game changers. And when we think about the smartphone, right, the iPhone in the beginning, and then now what it is. Now, if you leave home and you forget your iPhone, it's like a third appendage. Your day is less than what it would otherwise be. But, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if anyone would have asked us, do we need this in our lives, we all would have universally said, no, you know, I've got a phone at home, I got a phone at work, why do I need to have one with me?
Wes, as you look at innovation, people often might say, well, I don't have time to innovate because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, pretty soon, if that's your motto and you're not considering innovation and change on an ongoing basis, pretty soon the reason it's broke is because your competitor just passed you by going rather fast.
I think that's a good way to look at it, Jeff. And that kind of brings us back to the old adage about the, do you really want to be the best company making buggy whips? 100 years ago, sure, but today not so valuable. So it's, to your point, a consistent culture of innovation, again, where you, it's always part of something that you do, and it's not a one-time initiative. It's an ongoing process, a way of thinking. Again, that's really key to ongoing success, where you've got to keep your product relevant. We talk about the job that your product does and how your product fills that. And it's a school of thought for a company. It's a way of thinking that helps keep you focused, not just on your product, which is self-centered, it's self-focused, and on instead your customer and the need that your product solves, which is customer focused. So that school of thought and direction of thinking, I think, is really paramount in keeping your product moving forward and your company moving forward. But for that to work, again, it has to be a cultural approach and not just a one-time workshop. It's not something you can think about once, or you watch a YouTube video, or it's got to be an ongoing part of the way you do business.
Wes James is Senior Program Manager. Paul Kinghorn is Director of the Center for Business Growth and Innovation and Advance Iowa. For more on the variety of services they offer, go to advanceiowa.com. Still to come, buying products based on where they're made and the business of being an author. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report. Support for the Iowa Business Report comes from Iowa History Journal. The September-October issue features a story on an Iowa native with a stellar military career, another who was an NFL star, and still another who became a Hollywood legend. Get your copy of Iowa's only popular magazine devoted exclusively to its fascinating history at Fairway, Hy-Vee, and at iowahistoryjournal.com. The Iowa Business Report is presented by Advance Iowa. The first ever family business conference will be held in Des Moines on Thursday, November 11th. Designed to connect, educate, and provide helpful resources to Iowa family businesses. For more, go to advanceiowa.com and click on the Events tab. Apparently, America First is not just a popular political slogan. It's something consumers consider when searching for products online. Eugene Levin is Chief Strategy Officer and Data Expert at Semrush, which recently surveyed search terms and discovered this recent America First trend.
We are seeing increase in the number of people searching for American-made products. Over 4 years, this particular keyword gained more than 53% of additional searches. So that's in general quite material, even though it's a long period of time. But we're definitely seeing the same trend across many product categories. So it's not just American-made products as a keyword, but a lot of people are searching specifically for American-made clothing brands, and number of searches for this particular keyword increased 70% across last 4 years. And then for some categories of products, this is even greater. So for example, searches for American-made sneakers increased 125%.
So I suppose the takeaway for a business is, if you have a product that you can very clearly brand as American-made, you may overlook it just simply because you're thinking about quality of the description of what a product does or whatever. Be a good idea to tweak the description on the website for these online searchers to include that American-made, made in the USA, whatever language is going to be triggered by a search.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good advice for many people. On top of increasing probability to trigger certain search results, it also can increase conversion rates, because sometimes people shop in the catalog and they may be not necessarily proactively looking for something that is American made, but when they see it, they may be more likely to make a buying decision. So I think including this information could be relevant for many products.
And obviously, by extension, noting that a product is produced in Iowa can have additional benefits. Coming up, telling the story of winners. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report. The Iowa Business Report is presented by Advance Iowa and its Family Business Center, presenting another event in the virtual breakfast series on Friday, October 15th, on finding and keeping key non-family employees. To learn more or to register, go to advanceiowa.com and click on the Family Business Center tab. The Iowa Business Report is also presented by the Iowa Secretary of State's Office and its Voter Ready Iowa initiative, encouraging you to be a voter in the November city and school elections. More at voterready.iowa.gov. In this week's business profile, we'll introduce you to Ray Cole. Now, if you've been around Iowa for a while, you might think we'd be talking about Mr. Cole's business as a broadcast and media executive. But he's branched out into a new business, being a published author. His first book, Hangin' with Winners, written with Rob Gray, was released this past Tuesday. The full title of the book is Hangin' with Winners, A Lifetime of Connections, Anecdotes, and Lessons Learned. And Ray Cole and I connected via Zoom this past Monday afternoon.
Well, I had been encouraged for some years by family and friends and a lot of colleagues, both locally and on a national level, to maybe commit to writing some of the backstories to the many connections that I was very fortunate to have over the course of my career. I forged a myriad of connections, Jeff, with people from different walks of life, especially in the television business, whether it was news or sports or the entertainment world. But also, I look forward to telling the stories of some extraordinary Iowans. I have a chapter here, chapter 5, that's dedicated solely to 6 extraordinary Iowans. So to tell stories of people that I was fortunate enough to connect with and to cross paths with during the course of my career was, in fact, a writing task that I embraced and took on.
When you look at the table of contents, Ray, of this book, many of the names jump out as names people will recognize when they see the book For Sale at Hy-Vee, as it is, and we'll get to some of those connections in a bit. They'll browse through the list. Some of the names jump out. Some are not household names unless you're in broadcasting or business. Talk about the process by which you defined which winners should be included.
Well, I sat down and gave a great deal of thought to those people who really enrich my career and bless my life in a variety of ways. We interviewed more than 60 people. There's profiles of approximately 30, but I feel blessed, Jeff, to have engaged with people way beyond the number who are profiled in this book, and even well beyond those who were interviewed for this book. But to narrow it down to those that we included, I tried to include a nice cross-section of backgrounds and stories. So it starts with executives. Bob Iger, who ran the Walt Disney Company as CEO for 15 years and really led it through transformational events. Under Bob's leadership, the Disney Company acquired Pixar. It acquired Lucasfilms, and then it acquired Marvel. Any one of those would be a tremendous accomplishment for a CEO. He did 3 transformational deals for the Walt Disney Company. And then there was George Bodenheimer. He's the other executive. He's the iconic cable executive that led ESPN through the explosive growth of the cable business. He was there at the beginning. His story is remarkable. He literally started in the mailroom and ended up in the boardroom as the CEO of ESPN Inc. He has, to his credit, many awards, but the one that stands out to me, he was the recipient 2 years ago of the Lifetime Achievement Award that was presented at the Sports Emmys. His impact in sports generally and at the Walt Disney Company in particular is massive. And then we go to television. Long list of people, names there that people will know, from the late Peter Jennings to Diane Sawyer to Robin Roberts to George Stephanopoulos to Bob Woodruff, who was the victim of a roadside explosion that caused him to have a very serious traumatic brain injury. So many people like that. I zero in on some White House correspondents. Then I go to sports in chapter 3, and we talk about someone as interesting as Howard Cosell to someone as inspirational as Dick Vitale. And then we go to chapter 4, which is entertainment. And we have people in there like Jimmy Kimmel. A lot more to Jimmy than people see in late night television. He's a very fascinating guy. He wrote a children's book. He contributed $10,000 of the proceeds from that children's book to Blank Children's Hospital here in Des Moines. Then there's people like Stephen Colbert in there. Dr. Oz is in there. Michael J. Fox, who probably has garnered the most attention of any profile in my book. Then it's chapter 5, Extraordinary Iowans. Governors Ray and Branstad, Bill Knapp, the most incredible philanthropist that Iowa has ever seen. We interviewed Bill Knapp, Jeff, on the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Okinawa, the bloodiest battle in the Pacific Theater during World War II that he was a part of. And it was fascinating, Jeff, because he was 17 years old. He had to have his parents sign a waiver so he could serve his country, and serve it he did. And then someone, your viewers, especially in your part of the state in Waterloo, Cedar Rapids, Cedar Falls area, Coach Ed Thomas, who I had the great privilege to nominate for the Arthur Ashe Courage Award that was presented to his family at the 2010 ASPYs. Very inspiring story. And then 2 others in that chapter, Bernie Saga, who led the Iowa High School Athletic Association, and the great 2-sport All-American from Iowa State University, Gary Thompson, a.k.a. the Rollin' Rockin'. And then chapter 6 are winning organizations like Variety, the Children's Charity, the V Foundation, Principal Charity Classic, and several others. And then my favorite chapter is chapter 7. It's simply titled Lessons Learned. And we distilled down, Rob Gray and I did, all of the lessons from those profiles and many others from the people we interviewed. And we put them into sections that make it easy for people to read. There's something there for everyone. The very first quote that leads off my prologue is one from Arthur Ashe. It's a very simple quote that we all have to get to the stage in life where just going for it is more important than winning or losing. The lessons learned chapter really makes that clear. And I think that people, whatever their stage in life, will take away something from chapter 7.
You did the interviews, you have these profiles, and then you wanted to distill it into chapter 7, which you've titled Lessons Learned. So as you had all of this in front of you, and as you tried to make sense of all of the different ways that these individuals have been winners, what did Ray Cole learn about winning?
The lasting impression that writing this book with Rob Gray has left on me is that winning has everything to do with the relentless pursuit of being the best version of ourselves possible. It has to do with being the kind of person you'll be happy to live with the rest of your life, Jeff. You know, it's not any more complicated than that. I think that winning is about making the most out of each and every one of our individual winning qualities. And then, as I like to say, and then fanning those, even the tiniest possibilities, into a bonfire of success. All of us can do that. All of us have winning qualities. It's up to us to fan those into that bonfire.
Ray Cole, author of Hangin' with Winners. The book is available at the normal online sites and in every Hy-V store in the Midwest. The website is hanginwithwinners.com. One of the key points is that all the proceeds from the book will go to 6 different charities. Variety, the Children's Charity of Iowa, Blank Children's Hospital, the Iowa Hall of Pride, and Character Counts, those 4 in Iowa, plus the V Foundation, and the Broadcasters Foundation of America. And that brings us to the close of this week's program. We're back again next week at this same time. In the meantime, you can listen to all or part of today's program by going to totallyiowa.com and clicking on the radio programs link. I'm Jeff Stein. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a prosperous week.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com.